Yeah. Oh, I have another question for you.
Okay.
So, what kind of food do you guys eat?
Oh, it's so funny. Actually, pretty much everywhere that you go in the Caribbean, you'll pretty much see the same dishes. So, the Caribbean has like a cultural fusion. You have Chinese influences, very heavy, strong African influences. Mm-hmm. And then you have some Indian input as well. So we have like roti, which is Indian. We have a dish called saltfish and Johnny cakes, which is the most popular that you're going to get anywhere in the Caribbean. And that kind of stemmed from like during slavery. These foods were created, and they're so amazing. Like, yeah, they're really, really wonderful. So it's a very kind of rich flavor, rich aroma, lots of vegetables.
What kind of spices or flavors would you say are particularly dominant in that dish?
Let's see. Johnny cakes. Oh, my goodness. I can't even describe. It's just...
it's home.
I know. It's just good. You just have to taste it. But we use plantain, which is like a cousin of the banana a lot.
Oh.
It goes with a lot of things. So, yeah.
Are there any good restaurants in Boston?
Oh.
I feel like I know what you're going to say. Because every time I ask this question to someone from a different country, they always say... no.
I know, nothing's quite like home, right?
Oh.
It's never quite like home.
But there are definitely West Indian places that you can go in the Boston area, I would say, right? Maybe not necessarily Catician, right? But
Right. There's a Jamaican place that I went to a couple weeks ago called Ortonique.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure if it's still open, but I know that there's another place called Flames. That's
oh yeah, they're definitely still open.
Flames is pretty good.
Yeah,
so.
they get really quite popular there. You gotta like get there early on weekend nights. They like the line goes out the door.
Wow, I've never actually been there. I've ordered in, but I've never been there. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's good. It's good.
There's a place that's right near here. Not right near here, but you know we're in the MIT area, so we're in Cambridge, and there is a place, little tiny little place that I believe is called, I want to say it's called the Great Cafe, but I don't think that's right.
Okay.
Just this little place, and they do very traditional West Indian food, I'm pretty sure, and it's right on River Street.
Okay.
But I can't for the life of me remember the name. I'm actually here looking it up on Google as we're talking.
So Amy will get back to us later.
That's right. Yes. I'll report back to Sferio and we'll let you know where the good places to eat good West Indian food would be in the area. You know, it's already 7 p.m. here on WMBR Cambridge. It is, and we're just sitting here chatting away. The folks from the next show have very kindly allowed us to kind of go a few minutes over so that we can give Jasmine some time to get her questions in, because we know she had trouble getting here today. So
yeah,
that was nice.
Thank you.
Those guys are music from human beings, and they will be coming up after us shortly after this to provide you with some spiritual enlightenment for your weekend. But in the meantime, if you have any other thoughts that you want to add here, we should probably start wrapping up, and I know you also have we have announcements to do as well.
Yeah. I guess my last question, if we run out of time, my last question would be, how is St. Kitts different from all the other Caribbean islands?
Oh, that's a great question.
That is a good question. That's a zinger. So let's see. I would say our smallness. We're so tiny that it's a really unique experience. You can literally walk down the street and people know which family you belong to.
Everyone knows who you are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you know everybody in a family, like, oh, those are the Gumses. These are, you know. And so that makes it a very warm place to grow up.
Mm.
People care about you, even if you're not physically related. They'll advise you. They'll help you when you have a problem. And, you know, there's a lot of respect. Everybody says good morning and good afternoon and acknowledges each other.
Wow,
so.
That's nice.
Yeah. So cool. Thank you guys.
I just ask one more thing related to that? Do you feel like that's in any kind of danger of sort of going by the wayside, that style of living, now that tourism is becoming so big, as we were talking about at the beginning of the program?
Mm. Well, that's a real concern. Because, you know, you do notice like a bit of the culture maybe changing as the media gets more As the media's role in society becomes more and more important, you see younger generations behaving less and less like traditional Caribbean society. So I don't know. I hope not. I hope we stick to it.
I hope so, too. Yeah. It sounds like a beautiful place.
Yeah. Thank you. You guys should come.
Hey, Australia really. Road trip.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
It was really nice having you at the show today. Thanks for coming.
Thank you so much for having me.
Kalia Robinson, rising sophomore. We'll be hearing more about your progress with your civil engineering program, I'm sure, as the years go by.
And her very exciting. Her project on building bridges.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Bridges, physical and metaphorical. Deep. Yes.
Very deep.
All right. Well, you know, we do still have a moment or so here that was donated to us by our friends in the next show, which gives us enough time to do a brief announcement that I believe Jasmine has lined up for us here.
Oh, I'm getting the music. All right. Hi, everyone. I mean, I've been talking to you, but still, hi. Today is a very exciting day. Because today, Bhopal Survivor Organizations finally celebrated victory after the government of India announced that it'll set up an empowered commission on Bhopal and take legal action on the civil and criminal liabilities of Union Carbide and Dow Chemical. So for those of you who are not familiar with the issue, Bhopal is a region where Dow Chemical spilled their oil and, you know,
Union Carbide.
Union Carbide. But Dow Chemical actually bought it. So now Dow Chemical is responsible for it. And they finally announced that they are going to repay what they have done. They are going to take care of all the bad things that they've done, you know, all the human rights crises that happened and people who have been hurt. And today is the day that they announced that they are going to do it. So what the commission of the commission on Bhopal is going to do is allocating resources to different rehabilitation schemes on research projects, issue tenders, and identify implementing central or state government agencies and charging them to be responsible for all the work. So to do this, a lot of effort has gone in. 800 people from at least 10 different countries joined them in solidarity by fasting for a day or longer. And there has been international support for the campaign from 6,000 people. And people have been sending faxes. People have been, you know, doing different sorts of campaigns where they're from. So especially at MIT, we had a campaign last year where we were actually on the front cover of the Globe. And it was really exciting. And
congratulations.
Yeah, I know. So today is a very happy day for us, and I just wanted to share that with everyone. And yeah.
That's going all the way back to 1984, I believe, was when that accident took place.
Yeah.
I remember I was still in high school when that happened.
Oh.
You probably weren't even born yet, were you?
No, Jasmine? I wasn't.
Oh my God. Okay.
But I think
this is so great that you were involved in this movement nonetheless, and that you're, you know, carrying it on.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I think this goes to say that, because I know we emphasize human rights actions all the time, like every Friday on this show, and victories like these tell you that whatever you do, it's gonna happen, and it's actually gonna make a difference. Yeah. So
persevere.
Let's do it.
It may take 20 years or so, but
it'll happen.
It'll happen.
Yep.
Yeah. Excellent. Wise words from our Jasmine Park here.
Sorry.
Always.
And this is probably a good moment for me to mention that the views and opinions expressed on Sferio do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT. And we welcome your comments. You can send us email at sferio@wmbr.org. And I think that's pretty much it for us here today. What do you think?
Oh, they can visit our website, too.
Oh, and they can visit our website. That's right, at http://web.mit.edu/hemisphere. I just like saying backslash.
Yeah. All right, so
Thank you guys so much.
Yeah.
It's time for us to say goodbye.
Bye
bye. Bye bye, everybody.
We'll see you next Friday,
6 to 7 p.m. It's Sferio. Stay tuned for music for human beings.
Looking for some fun on Friday? Well, start your weekend off with WMBR's Three Ring Circus. Hey! It's not just for kids. Tune in every Friday afternoon at 4 p.m. for 2 hours of music, madness, and mayhem with yours truly, Joan Hathaway, playing a multifarious combination of punk rock, roots rock, surf swing, and funk to work off the week's aggression. And when we've tamed that savage beast, we'll groove to the melodic stylings of blues, jazz, and lounge. Don't get too comfortable. You never know what's next.
I Dig a Pygmy by Charles Hawtrey and the Deaf Aids.
And neither do we. So join the circus every Friday afternoon at 4 p.m. right here on the Great 88 WMBR Cambridge. Thank you.
ومرحبا إلى Music for Human. أنا الدكتور جالس السكران. ومعي today with me I have Aurora.
Hello.
Aurora is a recurring co-host. She is a new age voice specialist.
Voice therapist. Thank you for having me on the show again.
Well, thank you for joining us.
So how are you doing today?
Well, thank you for asking. It's funny, often people see Dr. Jalis as, you know, refined and self-confident type of person. And they assume everything is fine, but, you know, I have to say today, things are sometimes things are, you know, when you face rejection,
yeah.
It's difficult, and I submitted two papers to a New Age conference, the exercises in meditation and for the New Age life practices, or EMNLP, which will be occurring later this year in Waikiki. And unfortunately, they were both rejected as being, you know, doctrinaire. So, yeah, it's difficult even for an aged practitioner of the New Age to face rejection.
Of course. We all must face rejection at some point or another, and it always affects us. We must embrace those emotions. I could hear it coming through your voice, the attempt that you were having to try to refine yourself and not embrace those emotions.
It's apparent even in the voice.
Yes, everything is apparent in the voice.
Wow, it's amazing. Well, we have our first caller, amazingly, before we even gave the number. So let's see if they can share with us their experience with rejection. Hello, you are on the air.
Mother Bonji.
Arthur Rainbow.
Yeah, Dr. Dallas, good to hear from you, man.
Marhaba, it's so good to hear your voice.
Yeah, it's been a couple months. I've been out of touch.
And how are the journeys?
I'm back and connected now. Well, pretty good. Yeah, I got a little update from Wisconsin. I had some revelations. Been out there for a while.
Share. I was, my experience with Wisconsin is limited to a brief period you know of when I was traveling through there and was incarcerated. I hope your experiences were more pleasant.
Yeah, you know, as a vegetarian, I'm not too used to communing with animals and especially eating them or preparing them with my hands. And, yeah, that's just one of the biggest differences I noticed. You know, we saw roadkill deer by the side of the road, and it wasn't my idea to pick it up, and then probably spent about an hour, you know, getting it prepared, moving the meat over into plastic bags and refrigerating them, and you know, the heart, all the parts of the animal,
all of the various
organs.
You know,
it's just so interesting. If you look at like a pork production facility, a cattle production facility, they go through about 330 cattle per hour. You know, these workers in the factories with their bone saw, and it's just utterly crazy. You know, the U.S. meat industry, you have your bone saw, and these cows swinging by the minute, and you just... I couldn't believe it, you know, because one flip of the wrist with that bone saw and you cut into, you know, the organ, the intestine, you spill feces all over the cow. And all these cattle, you know, they're dipped into a common water bath, and you know, and then it all ends up as ground beef. Everything is combined in the very end, you know.
As
common origins meet common ends. So when you just think about it, it's 330 cattle per hour. It's just...
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. That deer we found alone took an hour. It just, I never thought about it much because I'm not too in contact with meat. But that was a big take-home right there.
Mm. And it's a very amazing how efficient nature is at consuming and reproducing. I realize you are vegetarian, but did you partake of the blood of the animal?
I did try a little bit of the heart cooked on a bonfire. You know, I'm not used to eating the animal, but it was killed by a vehicle accidentally and was just sitting there by the road. I figured it's almost respectful to the animal to, you know, do something with it. Oh, of course, you wouldn't eat people if you found them by the side of the road. You'd probably, you know, have a ceremony for them or something.
Well, of course.
So, I guess I'm confused about that.
The ceremony of the animal is eating, of course, the animal, and of the person, it depends on the tribe. Arthur, hold with me. We have another call.
I guess it was a ceremony, yeah.
Hmm.
Okay, go ahead and take that call.
All right, we'll join you all.
Okay.
Hello, you are on the air.
He said, utterly. Get it? Utterly.
Sir, you are so insensitive to the plight of the deer.
Yeah.
Well, Arthur, magically, we have another call.
Okay, yeah, go ahead and take that. I hop on a bus here pretty soon anyway. I just wanted to pop in.
No, stay, Arthur. We have the two lines.
The bus.
Okay. Yeah. I thought you had another call. Okay.
No, our caller gave up.
I find it very interesting that you're going to hop onto a bus with a ton of other cattle.
Oh, the caller came back. it's amazing. You lose, and you know it returns. Okay.
Let's try.
Hello, you are on the air.
Hey, man.
Hello, marhaban.
I heard your talk of the vegetarianism.
Mm.
I have to say, man, like, they're there for a reason, man. Like, if you want to eat them, you should be able to eat them. Every soul has its purpose, and if that happens to be being eaten, man, you just got to eat them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. It's like, the way you do it. It's the dipping in the common water bath and the bone saws ravaging by it. You know, people are getting sick because they were exploding the internals out of pigs, and it was vaporizing the spine and the brain tissue. Workers are breathing that in, and, you know, bad vibrations from the spine particles.
Oh, terrible vibrations,
so it's not the eating the animals, really. It's
like cruelty to animals, man. That's bad stuff, man. But, like...
Yeah, but, you know, there might be technological solutions, though.
Probably.
Yeah. A lot of these problems, a lot of times a new technology can solve them.
Right, like a laser saw.
I know in the Midwest they're already using cold pasteurization. Really interesting. You know, it's kind of like pasteurization, but cool. It works by pumping the meat full of radiation to try to, you know, neutralize any of the microbes from the feces, from wherever, from infected cows.
This is a great example of New Age science coming in and solving a very difficult, you know, meat problem.
Yeah.
Sounds to me like just a bunch of people playing with poop, man.
Flying the coop?
Bunch of people playing with coop?
Poop.
Oh, no, I am back in New York now. I'm here for a while.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. It's so close by.
It's about as far as you can get from Burlington, Vermont, and Santa Cruz.
Of course.
Here in New York. Not a lot of New Age practice here.
Oh, no, that's unfortunate.
But, well, that makes it interesting, too.
Because you can be a good focal point for this practice, and it's a much must be a great resource for the city to have an aged and learned practitioner such as yourself.
Yeah, it makes it easier to channel those energies. Mm. More of a focusing going on here. Yeah, also pretty distracting though. I don't even know if you can hear me. There's so many buses, you know, with their engines going really loud. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we can hear you very well. I wondered if the two gentlemen callers were familiar with the work of William McGonagall.
Oh, rad dude, man. He's a rad dude.
Yeah.
Oh, you are familiar.
Yes.
I've heard of his work.
So William McGonagall is a great practitioner of poetry, which is an ancient New Age practice of putting words together in unusual ways to, to evince certain emotions and experiences. And William Topaz McGonagall was a genius of the written word. So on this particular subject, he spoke in a beautiful poem called A Tale of the Sea, which I hope Aurora will be pleased to read a part of for us today.
All right. I'll be glad to. I'll take an excerpt from the middle. Here, let me pull it up. This is a tale of loss in the middle of the sea at a time when one soul's purpose is changed into another, as we are speaking about. And looking from the stern where he was lying, he says, "Goodbye, mates. Oh, I am dying." Poor fellow, we kept his body thinking the rest of us would be saved. Then with hunger, Angus MacDonald began to cry and madly raved. And he cried, "Oh God, send us some kind of meat, because I'm resolved to have something to eat. Oh, do not let us starve on the briny flood, or else I will drink of poor Jim's blood." Then he suddenly seized his knife and cut off poor Jim's arm, not thinking in his madness he'd done any harm. Then poor Jim's blood he did drink, and his flesh did eat, declaring that the blood tasted like cream and was a treat. Then he asked me to taste it, saying it was good without a doubt. Then I tasted it, but in disgust I instantly spat it out, saying, "If I was to die within an hour on the briny flood, I would neither eat the flesh nor drink the blood."
Thank you, Aurora. This is a beautiful example of the spirit of the meat eater in Western literature. Of course, Jim was not bovine of the sea nor of the land. Jim was one of the companions of the sea, and this is referring to a particular incident in the 19th century. And it just Arthur, this incident you spoke of brought this to mind. And of course the word of McGonagall is immortal and brilliant, comparing the blood to cream. Which is interesting.
I can kind of understand that.
Yeah, because the nourishment is very similar to cream.
Well, it's an interesting point because Arthur found a dead deer on the road who had suffered and obviously was just laying to waste. And using that deer's soul and body in a manner that is more appropriate to its loss.
Yeah, I agree. I feel that the consumption of animals can be unhealthy if it is not regarded as consuming both the soul and the body of the animal.
Especially if it's been cold pasteurized.
It's very difficult to capture the soul without this technique of pasteurization if the animal is not fresh.
Yeah, if it's not fresh, you need to blast it with radiation.
To preserve the soul, to fix it within the earthly form.
This is an amazing example of technology and New Age lifestyle mixing together, combining to form a more coherent whole.
Yeah, I think it's too early to adopt meat into the diet for me at least, but I'd recommend it to you.
This ties in, I believe, into our topic of rejection, as Dr. Jollis mentioned earlier.
Yes, unfortunately, it's sort of a different sort of rejection. I mean, Arthur is talking about rejection of the flesh, of consuming the flesh.
Yeah.
And I understand the reasoning. I understand it's because in Arthur there needs to be balance. You know, Arthur is direct and able to penetrate deep issues, and this must be balanced with a softness, and the softness comes in the one place where Arthur is available to be soft, which is in his diet, and so Arthur becomes a vegetarian.
Well, you know, the idea is more about communing and less about consuming. So
communing,
so animal products also in Tibet, when they commune with the yaks, it's through the yak butter tea. It's not like drinking a cup of milk here. The yogurt kind of hairy a little bit. It's very much like you can see the personality of the yak in the bowl, and you become one with it. So it's true technically that you're consuming it. You're taking your nutrients from it. You know, same with an apricot nectar, but it's more of a communing with apricots, with yaks, whatever the animal.
I believe communing is easier if one is involved in the process, the actual process of slaughter. I once had the opportunity to spend a month on a farm during the chicken season, and my job was to catch and soothe each chicken before slaughter. And afterwards, while eating the chicken, what was on my mind was how calm they were before death and how they appeared to understand what was going on and where they were going.
So, Arthur, do you drink milk? Do you eat eggs and other things as well?
Well, you got to be careful with the eggs, because again, anything you consume, you're communing with. So these eggs are coming from, chicken factories where you have just, you know, small cages where maybe one bird, if you're lucky, could spread its wings out, where you have, you know, five or six birds packed in there, never able to turn around, where you have cages above with the poop from the chickens above kind of trickling down.
And poop seems to be...
You know, chickens are peaceful animals for the most part, but when you put them in such close quarters, they begin to cannibalize one another. So if that's the scene you're communing with, you're taking the eggs from and cracking as part of your breakfast. I think to drive the point home in a much more concrete way.
So it's really about...
You know, back in the 50s, you see wrestling competitors, you see, you know, boxers, whatever, they crack five or six eggs into a cup and they drink it down, right? Well, today, if you were to do that with today's factory chickens, you would almost surely be stuck into a bed, stuck in your hospital. It's that scene you're communing with. With high temperatures, with extreme heat, can you... You know, get away from part of that, but still, I wouldn't trust it.
You really don't commune with the eggs, though, when you guzzle them like that. And you have to think about every creature that you're consuming and every fluid that comes from those creatures.
Well, I actually disagree. I believe that there is some communion when you... I mean, because the wrestlers themselves crack the eggs, they must directly interact with them. It's true that it is not that they must pull it directly from beneath the chicken, but still there is communion there. And I understand...
Hey, I got a call coming in. I got to phase out for a minute. Mother
Bonje. Okay, ma salam.
Mother Bonje.
Namaste.
The issue, of course, being that I realize in some South American cultures, the Peruvian culture, comes to mind, that a delicacy there is the guinea pig, which is regarded as a rodent in many other Western cultures. And it is prepared, even though it is farmed, and I'm not sure what the conditions are of the guinea pig during the farming. But the guinea pig is regarded, you know, when it is prepared, the shape of the guinea pig is retained. So there is still a fur-like appearance. The head is placed in front of the meat, and the meat is there and exposed, so that the eater is well aware of the animal that he is eating, that he is consuming, that the animal that he has deprived of life. And so this communion can really occur, even though there may have been a farming, upbringing for the meat. And I wonder if how much of this illness from the meat comes from the preparation and, you know, the life of the animal, and how much of it comes from the presentation of the food.
Well, that's an interesting thought. I mean, certainly when one goes to McDonald's, for example, you don't understand that you are eating an animal, that you are partaking in the flesh. And
it's hard even at McDonald's to realize that there are tomatoes there, that, you know, that you're even eating vegetables, let alone, I mean, you know, there is ketchup, but it bears such little resemblance to the tomato that bears, that many of its molecule constituents come from, that maybe it's difficult to commune with these vegetables as well.
Which would explain why McDonald's is so rough on a person's digestive tract and on a person's system.
A caller too, are you still with us?
And every loss is a gain.
We have lost caller two, but we have gained a line. So for our listeners, the number is 253-8810. That's 617-253-8810.
I'd like to go back on the topic of rejection. I feel like there are some unresolved issues lying underneath. I think we must all understand, and this is more difficult to understand on a personal level, that in every rejection is a new opportunity, and that looking at the more complete picture, how each rejection affects society as a whole, is more appropriate in this circumstance. Do you like to tell us more, Doctor?
About more about the papers that were rejected?
Yes.
Yeah, well, there were two papers that I submitted to treatises in New Age meditation technique. One was about the use of coals and heated slate in meditation. And this was regarded because even though the techniques that I suggested were regarded as intriguing and unusual, the results were considered preliminary. So this is fine. I understand. It's, you know, difficult always to face rejection, but I will work hard on improving the results and doing more experiments with slate and heated coal meditation, and report back. And if any of our listeners are interested in practicing with heated slate or with coal, they should feel free to call me and to or to contact the humans list, and I can provide more information on how to contribute. Also, the second paper was on an ancient civilization that I visited in a particularly profitable meditation incident. So I was focusing very hard on the Large Hadron Collider, which should be starting this month, and on the strangelets and other phenomena that we can expect to see in the next 2 months from the Large Hadron Collider in Europe. And I found myself transported through this area where they were digging and building this accelerator to an ancient civilization of fishmen, where our ancestors apparently, against the common evolutionary picture of the moment, our ancestors had found a peaceful coexistence between, sea life and land life. And I visited them in their temples and in their workshops, and I discovered what I believe is the true Atlantis. And as I remained with them for many generations in my meditation, I discovered that there was a rift in the species between two rival belief systems, and eventually the two systems evolved into, they de-evolved into dolphin kind and mankind, into the simian form that we now encompass. And this is my account in the paper for a feeling of emptiness that many, many people in today's society feel. It was due to their minimal exposure to the one of their natural environments, which is the sea.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, unfortunately, it was regarded as too radical and somewhat doctrinaire by the reviewers, and it was rejected. And I'm not sure if I can revise the paper to, soften the claims, but I believe that it is, breakthrough research in the EMNLP conference.
Well, we must always understand the natural vibrations of the world and that and of society, and sometimes pushing too hard too early can lead to disastrous consequences and resonances that we are not ready for.
Yes, but still, it's difficult to acknowledge this in practice.
Of course. You must meditate further and join yourself with the world instead of concentrating on your own personal losses, which is much easier to say than it is to achieve. I find that an excellent way in order to reduce the feeling of loss and of rejection is to hum to oneself and listen to your humming, record it if you need to, and feel how it changes with your mood. You'll notice that different tones of humming and different singing, perhaps, wordlessly, will allow you to experience different emotions on command.
So that you associate an emotion with a pitch?
Not a pitch, really, but a certain resonance throughout your body. If you're feeling more tense and more upset with yourself, then your body will tense up and your humming, your resonating will be very different.
So there's a principle of resonating.
Yes, with toneless singing and humming, it's always the best beginning technique for voice therapy.
Do you take many patients in your, is it a practice, or do you hold a group therapy sessions for...
I always introduce new patients individually. There are, of course, group sessions for those who have visited me often. But initially, individual contact is necessary. Many people lack attention from an individual, like full attention, and that is actually one of the major causes of vocal problems. There's a lack of individual attention and the lack of self-assurance, really.
So you provide one-on-one attention when you feel that it is necessary to do
yes.
so.
And for every new customer, mm-hmm. definitely. Not customer, I don't like to think, more as friends, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the group sessions are, they're amazing, really. When you get a nice group of people together and we all go in a circle and discuss our feelings and listen to our voices as we discuss them. And allowing our two minds to melt together, our logical and our emotional minds, which shape the way that our voices come out.
And, you know, this concept of emotional and logical mind brings me back to this paper that I submitted to the Exercises and Meditation for New Age Life Practices, or EMNLP conference in Waikiki, which would be later this year. And this concept of, you know, our duality being, you know, having a source in some sort of biological duality, which is this fish-man duality, which we have unfortunately lost to the sands of time.
Well, this is an interesting point. Oftentimes, we try to reject our emotions. We try to reject our fish selves and only listen to our logical heads. Mm-hmm. And that leads to inner conflict. I mean, your emotions tell you I'm upset, and your logic tells you you're not allowed to be upset. But you must let yourself be upset in order to overcome it.
You really have to face the source of your upsetness, and this is difficult because sometimes your logical mind comes in with this, you know, affirmation so quickly that you are not even able to grasp the source of the difficulty.
And this is why we must meditate to overcome that sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The humming links yourself to a sort of primordial emotional logical well-being.
I mean, of course, vocal avenues for therapy are not for everyone.
Well, certainly not for the mute.
Well, Aurora, we are having another call. Let's see if the vibrations are resonatable. Marhaba, you are on the air.
Yo, Dr. Giles.
Scrabbles?
Yes, this is Scrabbles.
Marhaba, Scrabbles.
I really want to do some cold slab meditation.
Some cold slab meditation?
Or the hot with cold.
Oh, the slate meditation with the
slate, yes.
Ah, yes, the well, Scrabbles, there is I would be most gratified if you would join me in experimenting with this.
All right. Yeah, I can't believe that other reviewers didn't like it.
Well, you know, it's understandable, and the reviews were very positive despite the fact that the papers were rejected. But, you know, as we've been discussing, if there was no rejection, then, or if there were no possibility of rejection, the acceptance would be far less satisfactory.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Scrabbles, how have you been? We haven't had you on the show in several weeks.
I'm preparing my own thesis and preparing for my own rejection. So.
Oh, surely not.
No, I don't know. I as you say, because it could be rejected, that'll make it all the better.
I recently experienced this thought pattern where I would prepare myself for rejection. I would tell myself again and again it will be rejected, so that when the actual moment came, it would not strike me as with as much impact, but you know, rejection is rejection, and
yeah.
I mean, your work is excellent. I'm familiar with your work on the on flower minerals, and it's truly worthy of the degree.
Okay, thank you, man. I mean, I think my next work is going to be trying to link flowers with their power stones. So, like, if you take maybe even like trees, if you take like a hazel tree, which power stones that correspond to? Is it quartz or gunite or basalt? Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of possibilities there. And I think building that bridge would really help.
Yeah,
I think that's unrejectable, in my opinion.
Oh, I you know. Hope so. Yeah, one can hope. It's an interesting problem. Scrabble's. So, have you begun work on this flower, you know, power stone correlation analysis?
I mean, recently I went to play in the National Scrabble Championships, which is like, that's my name, man. It's perfect for me. And I brought along a few of my power stones, but I don't know, they really worked in the morning. I was grooving in the morning, doing great. I was winning the tournament, and then I lost my my gunite. Actually, was the key power stone there.
Yeah.
And
it's the
it was really eerie. I was playing this player from Thailand, Thonipon Tajikorn, is very good, and he won the game by playing, of all words, gunite. He hit me with my own power stone by playing that seven letter word. And I started losing.
Oh, it's a pity. It's a pity that it was something so trivial, really, this misalignment.
No, I was rejected by my own power stone.
But, you know, there is nothing more to do but to continue practicing and to focus and meditate more and to, you know, bring your effort again the following year.
Well, the rejection also brings to light methods of advancement and room for improvement. I think that's a very important thing to understand.
What's the best kind of improvement for Scrabble?
Well, I believe your current line of reasoning is powerful. I wonder about the possibility of increasing more the power stones, and if possible, uniting them with wooden or flower elements instead of with simply the you know, the stones. You know, it's the loose lattice. The more rigid lattice is more capable of, more fragile and more capable of breaking.
Yeah.
Scrabble's, one moment, we are having another call.
Sweet.
Let's see if we can join the node.
Yeah.
I know you are on the air.
I've been meditating on Scrabble for quite some time.
Ah, Robert.
And I feel that I would win in any championship in any Scrabble. How do you register for this tournament? Where is the Scrabble tournament?
Go to Google for Scrabble Association, and there's a national
association. Which one are you in?
Off
the top of your head?
Recent tournament was in Orlando.
Orlando, really?
Not like New York, it's not a new age place, but maybe that's why I wasn't feeling it. But tournaments
really,
every weekend.
Really, the Scrabble tournament?
Yeah, I really was.
I don't know if I believe it, but that's cool.
my name is Scrabble. They don't call me
all that aside, names are insignificant. Scrabble.
It's true. Dr. Dallas is probably sitting in a chair that's not reclining right now.
No.
Yeah, that's correct. I'm sitting upright.
What?
Well, I'm sitting upright. I'm not sure if I was reclining at birth, but my parents named me Jalis, you know, which is Arabic.
That's my second name. Do they take the last name in your face, or whatever that is called?
What?
You said Jalis, your parents picked that name, right?
Yeah, Jalis is doctor. Jalis is my my name.
So your parents, so is that like doctor? Like if I were, I would be like Dr. So-and-so, my last name?
No, my name is Doctor. A Doctor Jalis Sakran. Doctor is a title because I took a, you know, I went to university and earned a doctorate in transdermal mediation. And then Jalis is the name my parents gave me, a Sakran is the family name.
That's cool. Cool, dude. Good name is
Sakran. Yeah, his name is amazing. It's a very tight name.
And thank you. Yeah, in Arabi, the names usually have some meaning. The language is ancient, so you know, also in English often the names have meaning, but it's in other languages. English is a mishmash. Arabic is I mean, it's true, it's been influenced by other languages, but the it's much more ancient, and the words are you know, they've become assimilated and very much part of the language, so there usually is very little mystery about what the name means. You know.
Well, it's interesting to look at the meaning of names in correlation with attitude. It sometimes makes you wonder if a person's name will dictate how they think of themselves, and therefore how they will act through the rest of their lives.
Yeah. It's certainly possible. I mean, you know, if I believe that Susan will be nasty, and so does everyone else, and I treat Susan as though she will be nasty, perhaps she will respond by being nasty, nasty Susan. So then Susan will be a nasty person, and, you know, Peter will be a hard person, and, you know, and so on and so on.
I don't know. My last name has nothing to do with my existence. I know that. My last name means white in French, and I feel as if my personality is nothing of that is very blank, vast space. I do not believe in my personality is that. I feel as if my personality is more of a reddish purple color.
Well, perhaps what is what the others say in projection upon you?
Well, and really, white is an interesting name because it encompasses so many things.
What does it mean to you, Dr. Jalis?
Well, you know, it's the in terms of additive light, it is the union of all other colors. It's a broad spectrum. So, you know, whereas our brother Robert may be a purplish or reddish color, his brothers may make, you know, represent other projections in that spectrum. And to, you know, within that context, he may be the purple, red one, but to us, Robert represents a broad spectrum of many feelings and opinions and impressions.
A very bright light of many frequencies and resonances.
A multifaceted human being.
Mm-hmm. Aurora, what do you think of your own name?
Well, I think it's... I've always enjoyed my name, to be honest, because... the Aurora Borealis is one of the more beautiful things. It's gases on fire that emit beautiful colors. And that is, I think, it's a good representation of myself because I'm some sort of fundamental person. Mm-hmm. But I found beauty in my voice and in my emissions.
See, you're kind of white in a way also. White with...
light.
Light.
Yeah, Aurora is light in some language, Latin or Greek maybe, I'm not sure.
Good work, Dr. Jalis.
Well, thank you. Yes, I didn't, you know, it was not trivial to earn this doctorate.
But my friend said that women have a better understanding of the universe because each month the moon goes in a cycle.
Uh-huh.
Well, the women don't exactly go through such a lunar cycle, necessarily. We have a rhythm, but I think that men also have a certain rhythm that is not necessarily understood quite yet.
Well, gentlemen, we only have a few minutes left. Yeah, I just wonder if you have final words on this concept of rejection.
I feel like you're rejecting our discussion of names.
Oh, no. It's a rejection by time, you know.
Right.
There's nothing we can do.
Yeah.
Nothing is rejecting.
Hmm.
We must think of every rejection as an acceptance. I mean, rejection of time or acceptance that our time is at an end.
Well, you know, we are being rejected by time, but time is also accepting, you know, hidden gems, the show after us by Josh. And so, you know, there has to be a symmetry there. Well, gentlemen, thank you for calling us today, and for listening.
Thank you for your brilliant preliminary research, Dr. Ellis.
Well, good luck, Scrabbles, with your thesis.
Thank you.
And yeah. And good to hear from you also, Robert.
Good night.
My salama. Rejection, even by time, is so difficult. Such a difficult thing to face.
It's also wonderful.
Sort of beautiful to have the symmetry. Well, this has been Music for Human Beings, WMBR in Cambridge, 88.1 FM. Thank you to our listeners and to Brutus, our engineer. Ma'a salama from Dr. Jalis Sakran.
Goodbye from Aurora. Namaste.
See you next week at 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Hidden Gems.
He would come home after a hard day and just start in on me, you know, like, hey, how's your day? How was school? What you got going on? I mean, it gave me the chills.
My father would drive me all the way to the mall. He wouldn't stop until we were right in front of my friends. And oh my God, when...
I wanted to go to Europe, and he seriously made me get a job to pay for it. And that one time...
He insisted on taking us to the movies, even though he knew Stephen totally worked there and I was totally in love with him. And...
The time I got this wicked, cool scorpion tattoo on my shoulder, not even the whole arm, just the shoulder, and he grounded me for 2 weeks. 2 weeks! And oh yeah.
When I wanted to major in ceramics, because I'm like way good at it, my dad told me I'd have to pay my own tuition. Like, duh. How am I supposed to earn that kind of dough making pottery?
Embarrass them. Horrify them. Freak them out. Don't worry. They'll appreciate it. Eventually. A message from the National Fatherhood Initiative and the Ad Council.
Good evening, Boston, Cambridge, everyone around, anyone that can listen. This is Hidden Gems in Plain Sight, proven to you it's not that hard to find good music if you know where to look, right here on 88.1 FM, WMBR, MIT's public radio station. I'm your host, Josh, and I was gone last week. Much thanks to my good friend, Lizzie Wilkins from Wellesley, who took over the show for me. Gave you a little bit of a different taste while I was gone at Lollapalooza, which was absolutely phenomenal, I must say. I saw Radiohead, and as she told you, yes, I had a religious experience at the